Hello everyone and welcome to Changing the Frame. We're your hosts. My name is Indigo Flores and my pronouns are she and her.
My name is Leo Torre and my pronouns are he and they. We are a podcast that discusses trans and non-binary experiences in the film industries. Every episode will count with the appearance of trans and or non-binary multimedia artists in the film industries to talk about their work. We're really excited to share these amazing talks and discussions with you all.
In today's episode, we are joined by a lovely guest, Ava Rua, who's a visitor assistant and projectionist at Dundee Contemporary Art. She has also done curatorial work programming Transcendent, which she describes as an exploration of the ways that people across generations have exceeded and pushed past perceived gender and sexual norms.
This is Changing the Frame. Hello, Ava. Thank you for joining us at Changing the Frame. If you would like to start by telling us about yourself and your background, please.
Hello, it's a real pleasure to join. I'm Ava Rua. I'm a 24-year-old trans woman based in Scotland, based in Glasgow. In terms of background, I currently am working as a projectionist and film curator and also a librarian, just because, you know, I like to keep busy. And yeah, in terms of coming into like film and my background in film, it's one where growing up I was always like around, well, not around movies, but I was always like shown movies. Movies were a big part of like my home life as a kid. Like, mom would always have like movies on. I saw so many movies way too young. Like one of those like initial, like fundamentally changing movies for me was like Romeo plus Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann one, and like 2000, like when I was five. And I was like, that's something to my brain chemistry, I will tell you that much. So yeah, like getting into film has been kind of a natural progression from there. And yeah, I've also I used to study computer games technology, programming basically. And I've always just kind of been involved in a lot of like different creative industries and creative things.
That's amazing. I mean, I've known you for a few months now, and I feel like I know loads of things about your career, but I didn't know all of that.
Yeah, it's a really funny one. There's always just like new things for me to bring up. It's going to be really exciting, like a year or so, when I can also arguably start saying I'm also an archaeologist on top of that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, you're applying to be an archaeologist at uni as well. So in terms of programming and film, what made you pursue that? What made you pursue programming and also projecting? I feel like you're one of the first projectionists that I know that are queer, and it's a very like cishet industry in a way. I feel like every single projectionist that I know from venues across Scotland are called Paul and David, you know.
or Ian,
exactly. Yeah, so I just wanted to know, like, what made you pursue those sort of careers in film, and also what roadblocks did you face when you were starting out, or is still facing now?
In terms of programming in particular, I think I've always been quite fascinated with curation and the way that people show things, and the way that like we create thematic like selections, we tie things together, the way that different works complement each other, the way that different works contrast each other. I think, and obviously like curation and programming, like as so much of, it very much filters how a lot of the public and people perceive and understand and experience like movies and art. And it's like a very vital and like interesting part of that pipeline of popular culture. And it's how so many people experience a lot of these things. In terms of projecting, that's kind of just, it just seemed interesting. It just seemed quite fun more than anything. It's like, because with the film stuff and like the general interest in film and like the interest in curation, and particularly since like throughout my lifetime, especially, was really like the first 10 years of my life, it was like film was still common in most cinemas, like as in like 35mm, 70mm, like film print as a way of showing movies was like very much still kind of the norm, and it was like only just changing into digital. And now the last 10 years it's like everything is digital, nothing is film. It's like a film is a once every 3 months exciting moment. It was like, oh, we have 35mm. And so I think projecting is like, that's interesting, that's cool. It's like a, yeah, it's a part of the film industry that doesn't really have any light on it, obviously, because it's just like, it's in a room at the back, and it's like, this is just how it happens without really questioning it. And yeah, running the actual projectors is just a very cool thing as well. So it was very much, oh, this seems cool, can I try? And I think also part of it is just like the projection booth, that little room at the back, is cool in and of itself. It's like you're on your own, you like choose when to like interact with people, you are in control. It's like you're running the movies, you have all the power in like that moment. In terms of roadblocks, I think more so than anything, it is just the lack of general space and the lack of like actual opportunities and chances that are available. Like, especially when it comes to projection, it's those roles are all filled out. Like you mentioned how like it's a very like most projectors you will meet are cis dudes who have been working for 30 years in that cinema, and it's like that projection booth is their baby. They understand everything about it, and yeah, they just love it, and they're like, they're not going to retire anytime soon, because like, you know, it's like enough to get by on, but it's like, it's not an extravagant paying job. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's also not very demanding, so you can kind of keep it up forever if you want to. And so there isn't really that much room to move into it, I find. Like, I've only seen like major independent cinemas like just a few different like actual openings since like 2018. It's like 3 or 4 actual vacancies being like, hey, come join us, come work as a projectionist, because it doesn't really ever, there's not really turnover in there. And it's also a thing of just like, it, they're whittling it down because there doesn't need to be as many people, because you don't need to like, it's not as taxing because you're not doing the like film projection anymore. You're kind of just watching, you're a glorified technician to some degrees most days, because you're just kind of watching the digital projection, making sure that they don't mess up in some way. And yeah, as for the programming side of things, that's, there isn't really that much space. Like there's a lot of people trying to get in, there's a lot of people like going to uni and studying to actually work on that. I kind of got lucky not having to go that path, and just being in a situation where yeah, there was room for me to get a bit of experience doing it. But yeah, like funding is quite dry, and like most places will have ideas of like, all right, who can we like pick up, or well, not necessarily who can we pick up, but they have connections, they have like, oh, we know these people do this programming, we could maybe get them on board. There isn't that much room for like up and coming, and there are like schemes and fellowships and things that are doing a bit of that, but you kind of still, you see them frankly dry up a bit over time as well. Like, oh, it used to be like 10 fellowships or opportunities for new programmers, and now it's like 5 or 2, or like a chain of just drips and drabs. And but yeah, that's kind of the main thing really. It's the general shrinking of the industry in a lot of ways, especially with places like Film House closing and the options get thinner, and the people who are actually experienced then have to go find other things, which makes it even harder for like anyone new to get in.
I lived in Aberdeen for quite a while, and one of my favorite places in the city was the Velmont Film House, which closed recently due to lack of funding. And it's very upsetting because I have many good memories of plenty good films that I just can't go see in the bigger mainstream cinemas. And it's just very sad. So yeah, I understand. I wanted to ask how a shift goes like for you as a projectionist from beginning to end. What are the little things that you get doing from beginning to end in your day?
So to a great degree, it kind of depends on the schedule at that time. So like, as in the program schedule for like the month going forward at the cinema. So if it's a fairly like standard week, like there's no festivals or like mini seasons coming up, then most of what we'll be showing will be kind of the standard fare. At my particular cinema, the DCA, the Dundee Contemporary Arts, it's kind of an interesting in between that cinema because it's a smaller charity, it's an independent cinema, and so there is very much like a focus on like that smaller movies, art house movies, foreign movies, but it's also the only cinema like in the Dundee city centre, and so there is like a level of like, okay, we kind of owe the people who come here like the movies that most people want to see, so you get that mix of like the blockbusters and the smaller art cinema at the same time, and so that's always like an interesting little thing going on of like, oh yeah, there's these movies which are like probably going to sell out in a lot of cases, are going to be more popular, which frankly there's a bit less testing, like most of them are going to be digital, most of them are going to be so planned and well done that like once it arrives it's basically good to go, you don't really need to test, like you'll check it and you'll test it to make sure it's not catastrophically falling apart somehow in this ending, but like it's going to be fine in most cases. But yeah, so like an average day when it's like quiet, there isn't really any like special events going on, it'll be the software we use like has a schedule, it like sets, you can set the movie up for like each time they're supposed to start, that lets you know when they're going to end, you make like a playlist with like the film intro slides, trailers, adverts, and just like all the important cues, so like making sure the projector's on, turning the lights down, turning the lights up, the sound volumes, and switching to like scope or flat depending on the movie. So there's like that stuff of like making up playlists, setting the schedule, but once the movies are actually running, you're basically checking like, is, have the cues gone right, have the lights gone down, is the sound at the right volume, is the sound on, it's like actually switched to the film sound, it's not playing some random music and nobody's gonna come in half an hour in and be like, why is Jamiroquai playing? You're just like, what do you mean? I don't think Jamiroquai is on any of our playlists, and I don't know why that was my go-to, but I think we should add Jamiroquai to some of the playlists. And just making sure the film is like actually running right. There's collection delivery of any like hard drives for the DCPs. There's checking the like online servers that we get movies sent into. There's just like that kind of maintenance and like housekeeping of tidy these servers. There's too many movies here. We have to move these movies over. This movie stopped screening. Delete that. Blah, blah, blah. Then, like, all the time, there is going to be, like, movies that we have to ingest and we have to encode. But that's particularly busier times. So if we have a festival coming up and we're having, like, the normal schedule for, like, 2 weeks, but then we have to, like, pre-prepare a whole festival schedule, like, a month, 2 weeks in advance. And so we have to get all these movies in, whether it's hard drives, whether it's sometimes MP4s, if their DCP isn't working. DCP is just the actual file format that film or the projector runs the film from. And MP4 is like, you know, standard video format. And we have to like encode that into a DCP. That's what I mean when I'm talking about encoding. So there is like, if it's like Blu-ray, we're going to have to rip that and then encode that and then chuck that on, make sure it's not, because that's the one that like can blow up in your face and you'll be like, all right, this is looking good. And then you'll skip halfway in and suddenly like three frames skip out of nowhere and the subtitles just turn into like Chinese subtitles for like 5 minutes. You're like, what happened here? So when it gets to that, those periods, it's a lot busier. There's a lot more like going on. You're pretty much constantly like checking movies, testing movies, just trying to like rep and code and like sort everything, trying to keep on top of it. But yeah, that's kind of the average day, is maybe you have to test one or two things. You have to make sure everything's running right and make sure nothing messes up in the queues and just make sure the building doesn't go on fire fundamentally.
I find it so fascinating, like being a projectionist, because I'm so bad with technology. And I know, because with Squiff's tech coordinator, like she's an angel, because turning everything into a DCP, it just takes so long. And, you know, the files are so big as well. And then to download them to the server to then send to the cinemas is like a whole thing. And yeah, honestly, I admire your job.
There is a lot of waiting. Like the other week, the DC has its Dundead Festival, its horror festival coming up, and like one movie was encoding, a couple movies were ripping, and it was just like sorting everything, dashing everything away. But because it takes so long, because the files are so massive, it's like 200 gigabytes worth of data at once. It's like taking an hour and a half to actually turn into a DCP. It's taking an hour to like just transfer onto a hard drive, and you're just sat there like, I'm gonna go sit in the sun for a bit.
Exactly.
I'm gonna go chat to someone. I'm gonna entertain myself. Yeah. There's nothing else to do right now.
Also, the projection room at DCA is so beautiful. I remember you gave me a tour of it. Was it December?
Yes, in December.
And seeing the 35 and 70 millimeter projectors, that was really cute.
It's of any projection room I've seen, it's definitely my favorite. I'm not biased, I swear. But yeah, I think it's like a very fun one because our chief projectionist has made it like a projection museum. So it's not just like, here's the digital projectors, here's the 35 mil if we ever need to run those. There's like, as soon as you walk in, there's, I think, six older 35 mil projectors. Like, I think one's from like the 30s. One was used in, I can never remember the name of it, but it was one of the studios that they used to do like soundtracks in. So it'd be like, this projector would be at one end of a room, like in a little booth on its own. It's this like thin, narrow, cramped ass room. An entire orchestra would go in there. They'd project the movie onto the screen, and then the orchestra would be playing the score like kind of as it's going and like working on it as it's going. And I think they did like that one in particular that we have in the DCA is like worked on some of the Bond, like the 70s Bond movies. I can't remember. I can never remember Bond movie names. Like there's GoldenEye, and then I don't know, I think there's a Thunder something or other, like Thunderball or something. I think that like that may have been one of them. I don't know. I haven't watched Bond.
There's so many of them as well.
There's far too many of them. I get confused.
Just some Bond movie.
Yeah, yes. Some Bond movie. You know, one of the old ones.
See, I find that so fascinating, like the projectors. I'm very excited to go back to DCA and actually take more time to look into them later this month. I was just going to ask, like, what else do you enjoy about your job, and what is one of your favorite films that you have projected in the past?
Ooh. So, I mean, there's like a lot I really enjoy about my job in terms of the projecting. Just the general stuff, like as a very chill workload, like, because there's like constantly things to do. And I love like working with tech. Like that's why, like I was originally studying like games programming, is because like like that was one where it was like I was going to uni and I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm gonna do. And I guess I like games and I guess I like tech and I guess I like programming. And like that didn't work out, but like that love for tech hasn't really gone. I still like really enjoy working with it and like interacting with it a lot. So it's like quite a deeply satisfying thing. It's like you're very in control of your workload in there because you have like you're doing 12 to 11 p.m. shifts. Or at least at my cinema, you're doing 12 to 11 p.m. shifts. Like, you're doing the full day. You're in there, like, alone, because there's no one else. Like, there'll maybe be someone from the cinema team coming down to, like, oh, can we check on this? Can we check on this? How's this looking? Oh, have these movies come in? Have these movies gone out? For the most part, though, you are kind of on your own. You control, like, when you go and see other people. That's, frankly, one of the best perks is, like, if you're just like, I'm tired today. I'm going to stay in here, and I'm not going to talk to anyone. You have so much power to do that. But yeah, there's just that working with tech and just being constantly surrounded by movies. You're like constantly testing things. You're constantly just watching things because there is like that downtime. And if like something's encoding, something's ripping, or you're just like nothing specifically to do in that moment, you're like, I'm just going to like check out this movie. The best bit of the job is obviously actually running the film print because at no other point do you feel like quite so active. Like you very much feel like you're putting on a show. It does not happen often. What do we have? We'd had to have Beau Travail on print because we were doing the Sight and Sound like best movies season over April, so we were really showing like Citizen Kane, Jan Dielman, Bo Travai, and The Mood for Love and things. But Bo Travai we actually had on print. I was not there for it. I was very bitter about it because I was working in Glasgow, but I was like, I was apparently like a very gorgeous print as well. But yeah, that's definitely the funnest bit because you're like actively working on it. In terms of working with print, so you get it in, it'll often come in like, depends on the length of movies, like 7 reels is pretty standard for like, I don't know, 1 hour and 40 minutes or so. Because every reel is roughly 20 minutes-ish, give or take. Like, it's always like a little rougher. So there will sometimes be less reels, sometimes more. And this is for 35mm in specific. So you get those in. Some cinemas will just run each reel on its own. That's a lot of changeovers. So the changeover is just when you change from one reel to the other, which is why every cinema is going to have like 2 35mm projectors if they're running film. So what we do is we splice it up into 2 reels, so just 2 bigger ones, like 4 reels on one of the big ones and 3 reels on the other, just so there's like, we simplify it. Don't need to change over too much. Depending on the length of the movie, again, like sometimes it'll be like 3 big reels, but we work with what you got. So like, you do that whole process, you have to do quite a lot of testing, you have to make sure it's like tight enough, you have to make sure it's like all good quality, you know, you have to like understand like what state the film is in so that you like take the best care of it, because you know, if you're passing it on to another cinema and then they look back and they're like, this is crap quality, who had it last? You don't want to get blamed for anything that happens to it. For people to look at it and be like, this is in great condition. That last cinema, they know their stuff. So yeah, there's like a lot of testing involved. There's like a lot of like noting down cues, noting down like when to swap, when to start, how long it takes. But there's a lot to do with that. You're very actively involved. And then at the end where you're because you have to basically be tied to the 35mm projectors like the entire time the film is running, because if it suddenly gets jammed, you have to move fast to have the film clean and keep moving and make sure no damage actually happens, and to make sure it doesn't just like suddenly freeze and then everyone's in the cinema like, what the hell just happened? And yeah, when the movie's actually finished and you're sat there like just letting the reel run out and you're like just watching out over the credits and people are coming up past and they're like peeking out at the projection booth, like you feel like you've done something. You feel like, yeah, you've actually put on a performance. You've given these people a proper show. And it's a much more like active and involved part of the like cinema experience, and it feels like a lot more fulfilling doing that. Like, even though like just showing movies in general is like, yeah, great feeling, y'all are welcome, when it's 35mm you feel very at the heart of it.
We are gonna move on to talking about programming now, and we wanted to discuss your Transcendent program. In particular, what was the process like to pick Donna Macy and Paris is Burning to be part of the program?
So with Transcendent, the actual picking of the films was pretty straightforward. How it all came about in the first place was, I'm going to say it diplomatically, I negotiated, I discussed with the head of cinema about like getting some practice in curation and programming. What actually happened was I bothered her until she was like, here's this thing. So yeah, I'd like been talking to her for a while about like, yeah, it'd be interesting to do this. She was like, yeah, I would actually be good to like have, like develop those skills like in-house and give people the opportunity to like do that kind of thing within the building. And then it was 2022 and we got a screening for Donna, and it was like, and so she approached me and she was like, yeah, we could do something with this. Like, it definitely, it's one, it'd be like nice to like kind of expand into like queer cinema more broadly and kind of do something specific for that, and it would be nice to put on like a proper event for it, like whether that's a Q&A, whether that's a discussion, and you know, it would be like a good practice for me. It was like kind of the initial selling point. And then like the same distributor came back with Maisie and it was like, okay, let's discuss this. Will we show like one or the other? Well, like what will we do around them? And so it was like just kind of a gradual discussion. Eventually it was like, well, why don't we show both of them, like a mini season, and do like a thing around it to actually make it part of the program rather than just like a one-off event. So in that sense, Donna and Maisie were kind of set up from the get-go, and it did work that it ties into like a lot of what I do outside of like film as well, where like I have a general interest and I do a lot of work in histories in general, and particularly queer histories, and I do have a particular focus and interest on like intergenerational queer communities and intergenerational trans communities, and like that focus on older LGBT people, which gets lost or gets mangled or gets put through like certain lenses because of a variety of things, but like particularly because of like the AIDS crisis and like conceptions of really like, you know, right wing conceptions of like, oh, trans people have only existed for 20 minutes. And so it was like a sit down, we were like discussing it, and we were like, what, all right, if we do something like this, if we make it a season, like what will we put around it? What will we put, like what will be like the third movie, or like how many movies necessarily? And when it was like, what's the next movie going to be? I think it was kind of like, well, they're both very much like focused around like older LGBT people and like around like queer history, and it also has like a focus on like drag and like queer communities in drag. And it was like, well, Paris is Burning, that seems an obvious one, like obviously because it's like such, or relatively was like such a big movie and is such like a piece of like queer film history, and it kind of like tied it all together. It was like, all right, there's like present older queer people like very much reflecting on their lives, reflecting on like past and who they are and who they are now and like the changes and things, but also a piece kind of, granted only in the 90s, but still more of its time, and like, oh, like very in a very different circumstance than we kind of are in the past even just decade. So yeah, that kind of all came together. It was like, yeah, let's do a thing on history. And then it was just a process of like, how are we gonna build around it? What are we gonna do around it? What other things can we put around it? It then became a question of like, and the real programming kind of became, all right, what are we putting alongside it? Are we doing shorts? Are we doing discussions? Are we doing, you know, myriad other things? Ultimately, especially with Paris is Burning, it was like, okay, this is like an important film in terms of like queer film history. It's also one that's dealt with like a lot of critique and has a lot of like problems with it, and like with, you know, the relationship between like the director and the people filmed, and like, you know, the nature of like, there's like so many questions about like, not questions, there's problems around like how much of a share the actual people filmed in the movie received as a result of like kind of the surprise success of the movie. And it was important, yeah, it was very much important to like have people who were like intelligent and like very involved in like the ballroom scene and like that queer scene, who knew how to like critique it well and like actually bring light and educate other people on what it's like and why it is a problem. So that panel discussion for Paris is Burning with Housewall Scotland, hosted by you, was really beneficial, and I think one of my preferred events from the weekend. But so yeah, we also wanted to give it like very much a Scottish element and like tie it in. So it's like, because yeah, Paris is Burning, obviously American. Donna is like, oh, it's a Welsh director, but it's a trans woman in San Francisco. And Maisie is, I think, an all English production, if I remember right. So we wanted to give it a, like a bit more of a local feel and like a Scottish feel and some representation in that sense. So yeah, we had Every Man by Jack Gossens, a Dutch filmmaker who's been living in Scotland. And it's, you know, it's a Scottish production, and it's like a very much like a relevant part of it. So we wanted like that element in like a film, at least like produced in Scotland, made in Scotland, kind of exploring the same themes and ideas. And then also part of the program, we had Queer Stories, a performance by Shaper Caper, which is a queer dance group based in Dundee.
I know you already went into a little bit of the question that I was going to ask next. I think because you're new to curation, I feel like you did such a great job like getting complimentary events into the films that you've picked. And also, like you said, I unfortunately couldn't go to the other two events, but I went to Paris is Burning and I did host a discussion. And it was, I think, something great that you did with that was that you were like, we are thinking of showing this film. You can do the conversation the way that you want it and kind of bring it to the community the film is about to discuss about it within ourselves. Because then it was me and Noosa and Eve from Houseboat Scotland, and we kind of mentioned the reasons why the film was criticized, since the director was a white cis lesbian that was kind of bringing this anthropological lens into the Black and Latin queer community in New York. And yeah, and it was great as well, because then we could push that into Houseboat Scotland, like the amazing work that they're doing in Scotland right now. And yeah, it was, I just want to like say that you did such a great job putting those complimentary events together, because curation is not only picking the films, but creating the environment that they are put in. So yeah, I didn't know it was the first time that you were curating something. So like, you did such a great job with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, we didn't send this question through earlier, but it just came up to my head, like, because you were new to this process, would have you done anything differently this time around, now that you have some experience around curation?
I think probably. I think, broadly speaking, particularly with the complimentary events, it was, yeah, like my focus and my idea is still going to remain like it should be, particularly if you're doing a program around topics that you're not necessarily like personally like involved in, or yeah, something that doesn't necessarily come from your experience. Ultimately, film is a very communal thing. And so I think it's important for communities to really actively be involved. And I think that matters in programming, especially in programming queer cinema and cinema for like any marginalized group. It is going to be always relevant to bring in voices of those communities and actually say. So I think generally that is something that like, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily change. There's like a couple things. I think because it was a first time, I think in general, I was just like, you know, nervous. I was like, and I was like taught a lot, but there were like a lot of things that I kind of was, I almost felt like, I mean, you're like the professional. And I think there is a degree of like, I'd like to maybe be more, or like, yeah, coming out of it, perhaps I'd like to be more assertive in some ways. But that's more to do with like, you know, really kind of being more actively involved with like a lot of like the film choices and like being more actively involved with like discussions with the distributors, which like I was involved in, but like to a slightly lesser degree, and like stuff about funding and perhaps like just generally being able to like be more actively involved in a lot of the things. Ultimately, what looking back, I'm like, yeah, I maybe wasn't like, I was maybe too passive at some moments where I should have been like, oh, how about this? Or how about you like actively walk me through this or teach me about this, and then I can do it myself.
I find it very interesting how you talk about film being a communal experience, because it is something that gets made by oftentimes more than just one person, and it is consumed by oftentimes, again, more than just one person. And it is very important for communities to get to tell their own stories by themselves and for themselves. So I wanted to ask you about the impact that you want your work to have on the trans community, but also in general, and what it is that you're trying to achieve by making the programming that you make and the projectionist work that you do.
I think fundamentally what I'd like to do is, yeah, like bring it back to communities, like elevate the work of communities, really focus on like those outside of like the studio systems and like major productions, and kind of try to tie in with like smaller, more local, independent productions, which sometimes might be like more hit or miss, but ultimately it is still a matter of just like, yeah, but just having that opportunity to like be seen can always like make a difference in a lot of cases. I'd like to kind of provide a platform, but I think also it's a matter for me of like, I'd like to take a lot of like film and like media that's like more niche and show that it doesn't have to be, and like program it in a way to say like, oh, there's a lot of room for interest in this. There's a lot of like room to interpret and experience this. And like, it can be for anyone. Like, queer cinema doesn't have to be for queer people. Black cinema doesn't have to be for black people. Experimental cinema doesn't have to be for nerdy little freaks like me. You know, any, like, it's something that, yeah, I want to really create programs that are able to, on some level, expand people's thoughts and like give people different experiences of what media can be and what film can be.
I know you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but in terms of accessing funding, like, what was the process like for you to access funding for the Transcendent project, or if you've accessed funding for other projects, and how was DCA's help in that sense? To, because I think you mentioned that DCA got a little bit of funding and then you were able to do that, so if you could expand on that a little bit, that would be amazing.
So the majority of the funding for Transcendent came from the COVID recovery fund. Like, it was, I think it was like a perfect storm of like, I'd been talking to the head of cinema, Alice Black, for a while, and yeah, I'd had like enough conversation. I'd like been mentioning like, oh yeah, like I'm trying for this, I'm trying for this. And then like, yeah, the last time we kind of had a sit down, like before, it was like, oh hey, got this movie in, want to talk about it. The COVID recovery fund has like was just coming in, and yeah, talking to her, it was like proposing, just like, yeah, here's like some random things I'd be like interested in. And she was like, okay. And I think she was like taking a note of like, okay, there are some things we could do with this. And it was just good timing that it was like, well, we've got the money, we've got the extra budget space, and we only have a year to use it. So we have the money to pay you, we have the money to pay for like a couple movies, we have the money to pay for like guest appearances. Let's make something happen. So I think it was very much a perfect storm. So like, a lot of the funding was thanks to that, but there was a couple grants we did apply for, and DCA, in terms of like, yeah, well, the head of cinema like very much walked me through it. It was like, here's like some of the ways to like you find funding, here's some of the ways you can like apply for funding. She kind of like talked me through it. It was like, I think this is what we're gonna go for, this is what they do, and we just like, this is what I'll need from you, this is what like I'll be able to provide, this is what you'll need to do. So yeah, there was like a lot of like assistance in actually getting to that point. And I think the funding itself was, because it was through the DCA, accessible enough and was like manageable and was a fairly easy process. But we were in that good position if we weren't relying on that funding. And I think it's a bit different like applying independently and without like other like backup funding or other sourcing when you're just like doing it kind of on your own, or when you're like just pitching freelance and you're kind of like, yeah, we can do this. So it was like, at that time, good for Transcendent. Funding opportunities in general, a little difficult. And I, especially this year when funding for everything is drying up and like local governments are just dying for it. But at the time, really good. And DCA was very helpful with it. But yeah, funding is like a tricky one.
It really is. What other creative practices are you interested in, or any other hobbies at all? Because you mentioned gaming before as well. Is that still an interest?
An archaeologist.
An archaeology, yeah.
This is where I got unbearable. Better if, I was thinking about this like just a couple weeks ago. I was like, how do I introduce myself to people? And I'm like, okay, it's easy enough to like say, like if someone asked me like what I do, it's easy enough to say like projection and libraries. But there's like all the tangential stuff. So at the moment, I would describe it more of as a hobby. maybe at some point it'll get like actually released, but working to that. I'm just having fun with it. I do a lot of like music stuff, whether it's like production or just like messing about and like synth or with instruments. I think music to a degree was like my big love growing up creatively and like artistically. And I feel like there's still like a lot of things I look through almost through the lens of music, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know. All right, here's a weird one. Whenever I watch sports, I look at it very rhythmically. I always look at it through that, like through like a particular lens of artistry that I think like in my brain, I am almost comparing the movements to like music. This comes through more in like certain sports than others.
My first thought was ping pong table.
Ping pong is
there's like a really good rhythm to it.
Oh yeah, no, that is like there's a beat. There's a beat to a ping pong table.
Yeah.
For me as well, it's like basketball. Where you can see like other teams having different rhythms and how those like coalesce and how those make the game. So yeah, music is a very big one. Video games are still very present. I don't really do as much like programming stuff anymore. It's kind of like at this point I mostly just play. Like I still occasionally like do a little bit, like I'll program a little bit or like make a mod or I'll like help out like a friend who's like, oh yeah, I'm doing this thing. But yeah, at the moment that's like very casual hobby. And then I have a big ass bookshelf right in front of me. I'm just like, yeah, I read a lot, write. I'll do that with an asterisk. Or again, it's like, not really. I write for myself, but like, oh, maybe at some point. Yeah, and a lot of things. I kind of get easily interested. I see shiny things and I walk towards it. Like I've worked in galleries as well for the last 7 years, like pretty constantly.
And you work in a library as well, right?
And I work in a library. So that ties into the books thing of like, yeah, there's constantly surrounded by books. And yeah, like working in galleries for 7 years, like there's a lot of interest in like a lot of different forms of like particularly contemporary art, but, you know, like I'm open to like fine art, traditional art things. So yeah, I kind of just love diving into everything and just picking up bits and pieces from everything I'm interested in.
I can't remember who of my friends, but there's someone that has their on their bio a queer of many talents, and I feel like that's you. You know,
I would take that. I would like, happily.
Someone that's interested in so many things.
Oh wait, yeah. That's another thing. Yeah, going back for ancient history and archaeology. History is a very big one.
Yeah,
it's like a lot. There's like that focus in like queer histories, and there's. But generally, there's like a lot of interest in many areas of history, with, you know, a particular thing for like modern history and ancient history, Middle Ages stuff. I'm like, yeah, this is interesting. Not quite as much though.
I was just we're getting to the end, not quite the end, but we're getting to the end. And I was gonna ask, like, what advice would you give or share for trans creators that are just starting out, and that could be in any of the areas that you've worked with, which are quite a lot. but if you could give any advices, what would you share?
I do struggle a little to like give advice, because to I think not unfair degree, I do look at it, but it's like I'm just quite lucky. It's something I have specifically worked on, and it's like it's not like this luck comes out of nowhere, but for me it's very much like I build relationships, I build communities, and I surround myself with interesting people where opportunities just kind of happen, and like people just know things and people know other people, and it's like, oh hey, you're interested in this, and it's like, okay. So it's kind of hard to give specific advice, because I feel like that's not an easy thing to do, and it feels cheap to just be like, oh yeah, just put yourself out there, because that's not really what it is either. It's very situational dependent. But yeah, I would say, you know, just look for community. Don't work on that grind set, because, you know, it's in so many things, in particular in this world, like a lot of things are framed as like you gotta like work hard and you're gonna do this individually. That's not really how I'd say most things work. Like it's communally, it's people you know. And also I'd just say like, broaden yourself, open your mind, expand your horizons, like read weird things you wouldn't think to, watch weird movies you wouldn't think to, dive in, to anything and everything and just see what sticks.
I think that pushing oneself to find community and then get weird with it and find stuff that inspires you, and it's good advice. A bit off in that line, because you say try and find things that inspire you. We ask this to everybody. It's the last question. But what other forms of media? They can be queer. They don't have to be queer. They don't have to be by trans people, but they can be by trans people. And you can recommend films, podcasts, books, music. But yeah, if there's anything you would like to recommend to our lovely audience, what would it be?
First thing I always recommend, and I always demand everyone I know play it, Kentucky Route Zero. So it's a game, it's now on basically everything. It's on, originally it was just on Steam, on PC, now it's on Switch, Xbox, PS4. It's this beautiful, magical, realist game, like point and click adventure about poverty and community in rural Kentucky. And it's very much like exploring the ways people live when they're left behind. A monumentally good game. In terms of other media, I'm going to stick on games for a second, because I also want to recommend Disco Elysium and Recency Bias, but Pentiment. Pentiment is, both games are like point and click adventures, again. Both are actually murder mysteries. Both are kind of clearly inspired by Kentucky Route Zero, but both just incredible, incredible games. In terms of film, one of my favorite movies is Spigan's Long Day's Journey Into Night, which was released in 2018. And I remember seeing it because I was working as an usher at the cinema, and I was like just looking at, or I was like just setting up, and someone came down and was like, oh yeah, we'll need to have a 3D glasses. I'm like, we have a 3D movie in? And I went into projection. I was like, what 3D movie do we have in? And our chief projection was like, oh, it's just The Last Hour as well. And I was like, what the heck? What do you mean The Last Hour in 3D? But that is a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. Just it feels very much about cinema. Like, it's about memory and dreams and where they cross over and where film intersects with that. And it's stunning. And it's problematic because I'm like, I'll gush over this movie for ages. And I'm like, I'm never going to see it again unless it comes to a cinema, because I don't have a 3D TV. But That Last Hour is like a 3D one shot. And it's stupid, but it's so good.
I kind of want to watch it now.
Yeah.
It's so, I love that movie. The movie I watched relatively recently, released in 2014, Something Must Break by Esther Martin Bergsmark. It's just really good. Just really good. Sometimes I can't say more than that. I'm just like, oh, that's really good. Beautiful trans story. Music, I can go on for ages, but I'm going to keep it short and sweet. For me, the stuff that has impacted me the most, or impacted my creative practices the most, has been jazz in particular, and especially Ornette Coleman. And I'd say just listen to Ornette Coleman, but in particular, The Shape of Jazz to Come. It's free jazz, very much not for everyone. It's the very, like, improvisational, lacking structure. It's very avant-garde, but, like, incredible. It's just, like, the extent of what you can do with music and with sound and with creativity. And then, yeah, other than that, like, I'd say, like, you know, Herbie Hancock, Miles Davis, like, particularly, like, if you just, like, pick up bits of Miles Davis throughout the decades and the evolution from, like, that kind of starting, like, bebop sound to the jazz fusion of the 80s, like, remarkable. And then I'm going to be unbearable. I'm going to say Steely Dan as well. I love Steely Dan. This isn't even, like, a one for creativity. I'm just like, Steely Dan rock. Steely Dan are good. Yeah, I'd also say De La Soul and MF Doom, just for being very particular creatives in very different directions. In terms of, like, De La Soul is very, very precise, very technical, and MF Doom is funny and just smart and witty and brilliant. And then, yeah, I'd also say a little thing on, like, trans people in music as well, like Against Me, Wendy Carlos. There's a lot of electronics music and electronic sound that you can just be like, oh, that's a trans woman. There's, like, so many genres of electronic music. You can, like, chop it down to, like, five, and it's whatever, trans woman made it.
I need to play those video games, watch those films, and listen to those music recommendations.
I have had Disco Elysium on my list for a good while.
Play it. It's so good. I'd say even anyone who's like not interested in Disco Elysium, like in terms of what they hear of the like plot and things, I'm just like, play it for the personality traits because they're hilarious. They're brilliant. Nice. It's a great system.
Thank you, Ava, so much for joining us today. I've wanted to have you on the podcast for so long now. And it's just so nice to meet other people in the industry that's in Scotland and, you know, have those connections and actually meet in person. So yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us and for all the work that you're doing. It's incredible. And I can't wait to see the projection room again. So you need to show me, you need to give me a little tour again.
I'll give you the full breakdown. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
I love this conversation with Ava so much. We just want to thank her for joining us today. It's been a massive pleasure.
Make sure to follow Ava on social media to check out her work.
Thank you so much for listening to this amazing episode, and stay tuned for a following episode next month.